So our featured community-based organization for today is Shields for Families. Shields has been instrumental in informing legislation, piloting service models that work, and implementing programs that have real success. Shields programs have been nationally recognized and used as models by federal, state, and local entities, including HUD, the Center for Substance Abuse Treatment, and the Los Angeles County Department of Children and Family Services. Today, Shields is a nationally and internationally recognized organization that offers award-winning programs in Los Angeles' most challenged communities.
Here to tell us more about the organization are two of its founders, Dr. Catherine Eisenhower and Ms. Norma Ntume. And I want to take a moment to familiarize our listeners with your professional backgrounds. Dr. Catherine Eisenhower is the Chief Executive Officer of Shields for Families, a private nonprofit organization that comprises 39 programs for families who reside in South Los Angeles. Dr. Eisenhower incorporated Shields in 1991 with Dr. Exelina Bean and Ms. Norma Ntume. Since that time, the organization has grown to employ 380 staff members with a $28 million annual budget to provide comprehensive services to over 10,000 families annually. Dr. Eisenhower received her Bachelor's of Science degree in social work from Ohio State University, go Buckeyes, and her Master's in social work from, as well as her PhD from the University of Southern California. Go Trojans. She has worked in the substance abuse and child welfare fields for over 30 years and has remained at the forefront of the field as an advocate for comprehensive and collaborative services for high-risk communities. In 2005, Dr. Eisenhower was given the Innovator Award from the Center for Substance Abuse Treatment for her work in family-centered treatment. In 2009, she received the James Irvine Foundation Leadership Award for her piloting efforts in the child welfare and substance abuse fields. Then, 2 years later, she received the Los Angeles Magazine Awards as one of the 50 most influential women in Los Angeles. And in 2014, she received the Visionary Award from the National Association of Minority Contractors, the Southern California chapter of that organization. Dr. Eisenhower has also published multiple articles on family-centered treatment and is featured in the 2014 United Nations publication on women and substance abuse. Dr. Eisenhower, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me and for featuring our organization and for that shout out to the Buckeye.
He got it in.
Thank you. That's the Ohio State University.
Right. Our second guest is Norma Ntume, and regular listeners to this program will recognize her name and her voice. She's been on several times before. Norma is a member of the Charles R. Drew University of Medicine and Science Community Faculty Program. She is co-founder and for 24 years was the Chief Financial and Operations Officer of Shields for Families. She is also the co-founder of the UMA Community Clinic in South Los Angeles, two other free clinics, and two more nonprofits, which she helped create and organize during her long career. Born in San Diego and raised and educated in Los Angeles, Ms. Ntume holds two master's degrees, one in health science and the second in marriage and family therapy, with a specialization in working with African-American families. Her interest is in a broad-based approach to family systems medicine, the intersection between behavioral health, relationship interactions, and medical care. And this includes integrated medicine, the relationship of individuals, families, and entire communities in health systems and other governmental, social, political, economical, and historical cultural factors that contribute to health disparities in marginalized populations, particularly in African American and Latino communities. Ms. Ntume has spent over 45 years working in underserved communities here in Los Angeles, as well as in Oakland and Berkeley. Norma Ntume, thank you, and welcome back to the program.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
We also want to thank you for joining in as a listener today and to encourage you to participate actively in this dialogue by calling in and asking questions or making comments for our guests to consider. Our call-in number is area code 310-674-5896. That's 310-674-5896.
And now we're off to our first break, and when we return, we'll begin to learn more about the organization Shields for Families from Dr. Catherine Eisenhower and Ms. Norma Ntume. We'll be back in a few.
Welcome back to the Good News Radio Magazine. This is Charles McWells along with co-host Melanie Rodriguez. And on the other side of the table from us today are Dr. Catherine Eisenhower and Ms. Norma Ntume to inform us about Shields for Families. Again, if you have questions and comments, don't hesitate to call us. Our call-in number is area code 310-674-5896. That's 310-674-5896.
I was going to take that pause for you, Charles, but you got it. You got it. So to begin our broadcast today about Shields for Families, if you can give us some history background about Shields for Families and what Shields stands for.
Hey, I'll start us off. This goes back to the late 1980s when the crack epidemic hit Los Angeles so hard. Catherine and I were both working at the L.A. County Alcohol and Drug Program Office, and we were writing programs and writing grants, and we're really interested in the perinatal issue, that's the anything around women that are having the children. And in 1989, King Hospital had about 1,200 babies born prenatally exposed to drugs. And it came to the attention of Senator Diane Watson, who was in the legislature at the time. And she was able to introduce a bill and have it pass both houses. And so funding was provided to start programs in four county hospital facilities here, with Martin Luther King being one of them, to develop programs to assist the moms and the children who were having this issue. Mm-hmm. Well, Catherine and I wrote the program that described the model that would be used when we were at the county. And it went to the state and it was approved and the funding came down. And Dr. Bean was working with the children that were being born at King Hospital with all kinds of problems. She was chief of neonatology. And she came to Kathy at the county and said, you know, I know about taking care of sick babies medically, but I don't know anything about substance abuse. And besides the children, the women, you know, really need some help. So we got together and Catherine left the county first. And I was trying to hang back, but after about a month or so, then I came out and joined her. And the county gave us a facility. I think you could call it that.
Oh, well, I don't know if we can call it a facility, but...
a space.
Well, they gave us an abandoned, condemned trailer. Mm. That's what they gave us. And, you know, I mean, that was the part that Xelina, we all call her X, that's the part she didn't quite fill me in on, you know.
before, no advance notice.
Before I made that leap, she's like, yes, come out and you can help us. And you know, and so, we used to laugh because I would tell people when they came in my office, don't lean against the wall. And they would kind of laugh. And I said, no, I'm being serious. Don't lean against the wall because you might be outside, you know, if you do that. And there were holes in the ceiling and holes in the floor. And but, you know, we were there for a purpose and a mission. And so we made that work for us and transformed that trailer into, you know, the core of what we did. Because, you know, we mentioned what was happening, you know, in terms of the children being born, you know, exposed to drugs. But the other part of that is that in Los Angeles County, the response to that prenatal exposure was the removal of those children from the home. Mm-hmm. And so the crack epidemic and the fact that there were no services available was really destroying the whole essence of the community. Mm. And, you know, that's really the reason why we decided to leave the county. I mean, we developed the model, you know, like Norma said, we got it approved, and we wanted to make sure it worked, because it was, you know, I want to be clear that this wasn't happening anywhere in the country. There weren't programs where women could bring their children to treatment. And, you know, Norma said it very quietly, but I'm just going to add. I mean, we had to fight for this. We had to fight for this model to be accepted. We had to fight for it to be approved. And if it wasn't for leaders like Senator Diane Watson and, folks like Dr. Exelina Bean and, mm-hmm. and also Dr. Lynn Yonakura, who's at Harbor UCLA at the time, then none of this would have happened, you know, and so, you know, again, that was the core. I always say that it was really one of those, if you build it, they will come kind of situations. Right. I mean, we literally, our first employee walked into the trailer, said, "What are you doing here?" And we told her what we were doing here. And so we hired her. She was our first employee, a child development worker. And after 25 years, she just retired from Shields.
Wow. So. Wow. So from a rather inauspicious beginning in the condemned trailer, you are, have grown over the years to become an organization that has a $28 million annual budget and providing services to over 10,000 families. That's quite an accomplishment. I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about where the organization gets its financial support.
Sure. Well, this is the lady who took care of all the finances sitting beside me, so I think I'll let her do that one.
Okay. Our initial funding came from that grant that I talked about from the County of Los Angeles Alcohol and Drug Program Office. And after, well, the children could only be up to 5 years old that were coming with the moms to get treatment. And very quickly we saw that they have children from 6 mm-hmm. to 40 or 50 even. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what about those children? Mm-hmm. So we started doing other programs after school and weekend and intercession programs for the children. And we were able to get more substance abuse program. But then we started seeing that the women were coming in with more and more mental health issues. We were able to collaborate with the Department of Mental Health to bring those funds to the agency and into the community. And then they were coming in homeless. Mm-hmm. So we were able to work with Alcohol and Drug Program Office were the first to fund some satellite housing for us. And then we were able to get some funds from LASA and HUD and go out and find some apartments. We had three apartment complexes, an 86 unit and two 19 units that the women and their families were able to live in while they were going to treatment. We had in-kind services from Department of Rehab. We've not really gotten funding from them, but they provide folks to come out and assess the clients to see what they're eligible for and help them get connected. As Kathy mentioned early on, the Department of Children and Family Services, their response to the situation was to remove the children. Mm-hmm. And Kathy is an ex-DCSF emergency worker. So she was able to make some connections or rekindle connections with people that she had there so that we could start doing something about keeping the children in the home. So Department of Children and Family Services became one of our funders. And we just kept building on, you know, the City of Los Angeles helped us with some after-school programs for our young people and vocational education programs and some private, very little foundation funding, mostly governmental.
Mm-hmm. But it is a good question. I mean, that's something we have probably over 50 different funding sources at this point in time, well over that. And, I think you talked about our growth, and I think that's one of the things that Norm and I strategized on in terms of what type of money we go after. And so one of the issues that was happening in the community at the time also was really, I guess, in my opinion, the abuse of the community. You know, folks would come in from the outside. The data was there to support the need for programs, and, you know, people would take advantage of that, get grants, come in, do a two-year program, and then they were gone. And so one of the commitments that we made when we started Shields is that we were never going to do that. Mm. You know, that our services, you know, when people graduate from our programs, you know, our commitment is that we're there for you for a lifetime. Mm. You know, we provide lifetime aftercare services and support. So that really guided and directed and still guides and directs the choice of funding that we go after. So we do have a lot of federal dollars. You know, we like to have a whole lot more, you know, private dollars. But we were very selective in terms of going after funding streams that could continue. And continue to build also. So the substance abuse monies, they have just continued to grow. Our Department of Mental Health monies continue to grow. Child welfare monies is the same thing. So again, very, very, very selective about what funding we go after to ensure that we can maintain our commitment to the community to always be there for our families.
I want to go back to something before we get too deeply immersed in discussing the sort of the details of the services that are provided, et cetera. There's something that both of you have sort of touched upon a moment ago that I find really interesting, and that's a different philosophy regarding keeping families together. You noted that the Department of Children and Family Services, by policy, has had a tradition of placing children outside of the family structure. Why is it that you think it's so important to try to keep families together?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's the backbone of the community. I mean, that's what keeps families. I mean, families staying together keeps everyone healthy and whole, you know, and we've always made a commitment that that's where we put our energy, you know, that. And, you know, as we continue to grow, we continue to do things that even went further in terms of community and economic development that was also going to support the family. Norman mentioned the housing piece, for example. I mean, that not only helped the families, but it was also economic development in the community, mm-hmm. too. And so, but yes, I mean, if the families aren't there, then there is no community. I mean, that's the bottom line. So, you know, that was our goal. I mean, I think we were able to see, you know, from the beginning that those children that were being removed, they weren't coming back, you know, and that loss to the community of the next generation, that just, well, as Ex-Alina always used to say, that's just not acceptable. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And all the research shows that children do better when they're with their family, regardless of how bad the house is, they do better when they're with their folks. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we've done, too, primarily with Department of Children and Family Services, is to provide programs where we can have staff in the home once a week, twice a week, three times a week, depending mm-hmm. on the level of services that the parents have, to help DCSF monitor the children. We're able to go out with DCSF when they get an emergency call and assess the situation. They assess for safety. We assess for substance abuse, mental health issues, or domestic violence. Huh. And can we get them into treatment right away? Okay, we get them into treatment right away. Can't you leave the children in the home? Mm-hmm. We're going to be helping you to monitor. And so that's been a program.
Watch them. Yeah, I mean, we look for strengths. That's, I think, maybe the difference, you know, in terms of our approach. We're looking for the strengths in the family. What can we build upon? What is the community support that's available? You know, oftentimes, it's been with our partners and the churches that we work with that they've stepped in to assist with if kids don't have beds. I mean, oftentimes, I mean, substance abuse is a disease, first of all. It's a mm-hmm. disease. And, you know, but we treat it, you know, we've historically treated it as a choice that someone makes that makes it negative for them, you know, instead of looking at what happened that got them there and what can we do to address those issues and really support them from this point. You know, in substance abuse cases, when they come in front of the Department of Children and Family Services, usually we're talking about neglect. We aren't talking about the children are being beaten or, you know, severe issues that are going to cause that child to be hurt in any way, you know, because of course then we would want to step in and do something different. But these are children that, you know, again, the mothers love them, you know, and so we just have tried to do everything we can in order to make sure that they can all stay together. And we think that's the best thing, not only for the family, but for the community as a whole.
I think it's been such a great thing that you guys have been able to see a need and address it. Like, so you said, you know, every time you saw somebody come in and there was a new issue they had, and you would be, oh, we've got to attend to that, and you guys went ahead and did it. That's pretty great. That's pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, we can't take full credit for it because we've always had a consumer advisory board from, like, day one. You know, I still, after 25 years and number of programs, I still meet with them every month. Mm-hmm. And there, that's where we get our information. You know, we also do, you know, focus groups with the clients on a regular basis. So they're the ones who tell us, you know, what their needs are. And then that's when we take over and try to identify what funding we can get, you know, what resources we can pull in order to address those needs.
And speaking of resources and services, can you guys kind of give us some specific details about what the services and resources and programs that Shields for Families provides?
Well, our basic program started with substance abuse prevention and treatment. Mental health services and services for dually diagnosed, those that have mental health and substance abuse problems. We started with only women's services, and then we got drug court services and Prop 36 and AB 109, which are more prison reentry, which is one of our latest populations that we've started to talk about working with. But most of the clients that come through, they've had some kind of criminal justice involvement. So we've been dealing with that population for a long time.
So you've included males now?
Men. Oh yeah. Well, from way back in the
90s. I mean, we always have included them, but now we have services that are really specifically targeted for them. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Department of Children and Family Services, Child Welfare Services.
Full continuum of care. We have six family resource centers that are in the community, as well as, you know, Norma mentioned about family preservation services, adoption support services to work with. That program in our community has really worked with a lot of the relative caregivers mm-hmm. in order to support children and legal guardianship situations. Mm-hmm. So that, and vocational services, we have especially over the last, I would say, 5 to 7 years, really stepped up our vocational services, and that goes hand in hand with those men that are coming to us from the criminal justice system and the need for that. So that's our Jericho program. We have in custody programs also in San Quentin and Terminal Island. We work with folks to connect them to us when they return to the community. The housing, legal services, food bank. I mean, pretty much everything you can think of that a family would need, we provide it through our resources.
And we do some services that are the early integration of medical care with behavioral health, with our welcome baby programs and the in-home visitation.
Right. We now have two welcome baby programs that work with women who are pregnant in the community, and we work with both Martin Luther King Hospital and St. Francis for those programs.
Wonderful. And we'll get back to the training services you offer to get more information on that. But right now we're going to go on a break. You're listening to the Good News Radio Magazine. We're going to break once again, but when we come back, we'll continue our talk about Shields for Families with Dr. Catherine Eisenhower and Ms. Norma M. Tubank. So please stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Good News Radio Magazine. We're here with Dr. Catherine Eisenhower and Ms. Norma M. Tubank. Both of them are sharing information with us about an organization called Shields for Families. We welcome you participating in this conversation, and we're particularly interested in hearing from folks in the community who may have benefited from some of the many programs that are offered by this organization. So if you're one of the tens of thousands of individuals out there listening who have benefited from Shields for Family, give us a call at 310-674-5896. That's 310-674-5896.
And we left off with you guys letting us know about the services and resources and programs, but you also have training courses for families and for staffs, and you provide internship opportunities for people who are interested in looking into the social work field as well. So can you tell us about those training courses?
Okay, I'll talk about the internships for students first. From early on, we recognized that we didn't have enough staff. Most nonprofits, you never have enough money to pay all the staff that you really need for the services that are needed. So we saw that as a way not only to expand our bandwidth, so to speak, in terms of increasing our staff available to do services, but also to provide opportunities for the students to learn how to work with our families. And we think that's really, really important. We want SHIELDS to be a safety net to provide supportive services for our families, and making sure that that pipeline continues for folks coming on after we do, that they have the proper training. And so we have internships for Masters of Social Work students, marriage and family therapy, psychology students, students who are getting their alcohol and drug certificates to do counseling. And most recently, we arranged an agreement with Drew University to become a site for their upcoming physician assistant program. And we've been collaborating with Drew for a long time. We also are a site for their nursing students who come over and work with our programs and help with health education classes primarily. And so those are the...
We're all interconnected. That's
yeah,
good.
We are. That's We're right. still family. Wow. Kathy, you want to talk about the internal for the clients? And
yeah, well, I mentioned earlier about our, excuse me, our Jericho program. And so over the years, we started off with a fiber optics training program, which has employed, oh my goodness, probably over 100 folks in that field, very well paying. But as our services, you know, expanded, and we have more and more people coming to us, we saw the need to really expand our vocational services and help folks find jobs, but they have to get training for jobs. Mm-hmm. So now we offer courses. These are certificate training courses. Well, first of all, I should say we offer our high school diploma class because that's the one big thing. And something that we do, and nobody's told me I can't do it yet, so we keep on doing it, is that we mandate that anybody completing our substance abuse programs, that they have to get their high school diploma. That's part of the requirements because we don't want to see people back. We want them to be able to move on. So that's one big piece. So we also offer a certificate training courses in construction, landscaping, extermination, janitorial. We have, and if my staff are out there listening, I have to always remember this, OSHA, HAZWOPER, HAZMAT. Don't ask me what all those things mean, but they mean that you can get a whole lot of jobs in the construction field and removing, things that aren't supposed to be in the ground and all of those things. We also are working to put in we have a CNA program that we offer and trying to move some more into the healthcare field because there are jobs that are becoming open there. Also in a family daycare, we're working with some local community colleges in order to do that. So, you know, then we partner with LA Trade Tech, with Harbor College, with Compton College. So they're all real a part of us. So even though we may not offer, more than like 10 or 12 certificate trainings on site, we're connected to those universities in order to get our folks enrolled in those training programs also.
Can you think of either of you a success story from the past?
Oh, sure. Where do you want me to start?
Whatever comes to
There's
mind.
More than one, Charles.
Yeah, well, I mean, since we're talking about Jericho and we talked about the criminal justice, I said we've had a long-term relationship now with Terminal Island. Mm-hmm. And we have a whole lot of folks that are in Terminal Island who are from the South LA area. So just one individual in particular, he was when we first started the program, and he heard about it with our relationship with the rehab coordinator inside, had his family contact me, and very excited about it. So he came out, and I believe he now has a certificate in every single program that we have. but he also became an employee and has moved up the ranks. And now he is a supervisor in our facilities department, overseeing. And I guess I bring him up because of a couple things. Is because he reached out behind him, you know, to the folks that he knew were, you know, in custody and getting ready to be released. And so there are a string of success stories behind him because he reached out and pulled them in and supported them through the process. And I think he's become our poster child and our goodwill ambassador at Shields for Families. And I'd say his name, but I don't know if you want me to tell everybody in the world. But it's just one. But I mean, we have families that went through the program when we first started, you know, who became employees and are still working with us. And the thing that I guess to my heart, you know, to see the folks go back and they got their high school diploma while they're in treatment, and they went on and they got their bachelor's degrees, they got their master's degrees. You know, we have like 6 therapists who are working for us now that started off in our substance abuse treatment programs getting their high school diploma. So, yeah, so it's hard to pick a success story to tell you.
And in helping in the community, you've helped yourselves as well, right?
Yeah.
That's great. The same community you helped are the ones that are helping you run
yes,
the organization.
That is correct.
That's great.
That's absolutely
that's
correct.
And in talking about the services, now that we know everything that you offer, who can access these services? Do people have to be referred, or can just anybody call you, walk right in, and see what they need from you, and you'd be able to help them?
Well, it's the last one. You know, anybody can come in. And we really try to set up our services so that you don't have to have an appointment, that you don't have to sit and wait. You know, especially for our substance abuse and mental health clients, those who are in some real need, they can come right into our main office. We have an assessment center there. We try to make sure everybody's seen within 15 to 30 minutes and get them placed into treatment that day. You know, and with our other resources, like I said, we have 6 family resource centers that are in the community, and they're open to anybody. I mean, some of our programs are to a specific population, mm-hmm. You know, like we mentioned, drug court or AB 109, where there are some specific requirements, but anybody can access our resource centers and those other services. So,
Shields has been a player among the field of service providers. Not just here locally, but also nationally. Can you give us examples of any policies on the local or national front that you've been involved in helping shape?
You want me to start that one? Okay. Well, you know, yes, I guess. Okay, we left out maybe a little bit of a story as we're going along. So really how we got into the child welfare, you know, field was they came to take a baby away from a mother who'd been clean for, you know, 9 months, and just because she had a history of substance abuse. So that's when I blocked the door and told them, they're like, we're going to go get the police. I'm like, okay, go ahead and get them. I said, but you're not taking this baby. So I think that maybe was kind of the start of our advocacy. And particularly over the last 10 years, I think we have really pushed. We've trained our staff in advocacy. And, you know, I sit on the state child welfare council and have been able to get some, you know, things passed along the way in child welfare to do some of the things that Norma's talking about that we do, to go out and do something we call upfront assessments, where we as a community go out and look for the strengths in the family instead of removing the children, you know, first and then taking a look at things. Mm-hmm. We try to do things up front so we can keep the kids at home. On a national level, we've been very active in a couple of areas. One of those is child welfare finance reform. So I don't know if you're aware, when I first found out, I was floored. But our child welfare system in this country is funded by the number of children removed from the home. Okay, so that is how it is financed. So the more children you take, the more money you get. And that is just an insanity to me. And so we've been doing a lot of fighting at the federal level about child welfare finance reform and getting that system changed, because, you know, it should not be an incentive to remove children from their parents. Mm-hmm. The other area is in substance abuse. I'm the public policy chair of a national group called Treatment Communities of America. And again, really struggling to fight for parity. I mean, I know we passed the Affordable Care Act, and there's supposed to be parity for substance abuse and mental health, but the reality is that still hasn't happened. We still haven't seen that, particularly around the issue of residential treatment services. So right now, just to be simplistic about it, Medicaid or Medi-Cal in our state does not pay for residential treatment. And, you know, at a time when our country is experiencing the most severe opioid and heroin epidemic yep. with folks who have an extensive need for treatment, and I know you work with this population, yep. Charles, you know, residential beds aren't available, mm-hmm. and there is very limited funding. And so that's a big fight and that we have been having. We finally have a congressman who's willing to introduce some legislation, so maybe we'll get some change in that.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, can you explain what parity means for the listeners? Maybe
you know, sure, Norma. I mean, it's equal services. So, you know, substance abuse, mental health, those are all things that affect us just as well as any medical issue that we're presented with. And, you know, everyone should have equal access to the resources they need to address those issues. And, you know, but historically, substance abuse and mental health have always been looked at as like stepchildren, so to speak, when you've had to go to different systems in order to access those resources. So with the Affordable Care Act, and actually a little bit before it, there was legislation passed that established parity. But the and so again, just really equal services. I should be able to get the same services that for my mental health issues or my substance abuse issues as I get for my medical concerns.
Thank you for that. And does Shields for Families participate or conduct research? And if so, could you tell us about some of that work?
Well, that's always been really a part of what we do. I mean, when we originally came from the county, from our work there, we started with, you know, research projects that we were working in the community. But we actually have our own institutional review board at Shields.
Okay.
And because we want to support community research, and we found in trying to do some of the research ourselves that it was difficult for local nonprofits to be able to access institutional review boards at universities. And so that's why we set our own up. So we not only do our own research, but we also support the research. Well, probably at any given time, we have about 10 studies that are part of our IRB. You know, that are happening in the community. And it's also another way to ensure that the research that's being done in the community really is not taking advantage of the community in the process. So, you know, you mentioned some of the articles. So, yes, we've always done a whole lot of looking into substance abuse, family-centered treatment, you know, things that establish the need to serve the entire family has been our primary focus.
The organization is also involved in conducting lots of exciting community events. Can you give us sort of a snapshot of some of those events?
Well, you know, most of the events that we focus on are really around our families. Mm-hmm. And so we celebrate every holiday that you can think of, you know, and those are just ways to really celebrate, you know, families being together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everything from Juneteenth to Cinco de Mayo to, you know, and then, of course, every, you know, graduation that we have, you know, is about celebrating the mm-hmm. success of the families in the community. And so, you know, again, sometimes it feels like every week we're having a celebration of some sort. But again, most of our work is focused on, you know, celebrating our families and what they've accomplished.
Now, what do you do in August? There's no national holiday in August.
Oh, see, I knew you were going to do that. So, you know, the other thing that we do at Shields is we really try to support our staff and recognize the, you know, the hard work that they're doing and how critical it is to the community. And so, yes, we also celebrate every holiday possible for staff. And so in August, there, you know, as most folks know, there is no holiday.
No national holiday.
And so we created our own, you know, and folks, you know, like, oh, well, what holiday is that? And so we said it's the because we can holiday, you know, because we can have a holiday, we have it. So,
that's great. Folks, I'm sure your staff appreciate that.
Because this is really hard work, and staff need the time to unwind so that they can rejuvenate and come back and do it some more.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's not easy seeing community kind of suffer and go through the hard times. I think a lot of us would kind of internal. I know I wouldn't have the skin to kind of deal with some of the issues these families and the staff that they face. It's tough.
Staff isn't any different than you,
right,
really.
Right.
I mean, they take on a lot, and you have to be able to get that off of you, and you need some time to process.
You know, the majority of our staff, they're, you know, from the community. A lot of them are graduates of our program. So they're still dealing with some of the issues that we see in this community. And so, you know, yeah, we try to think of ways. We have an employee picnic every year. We celebrate. We have a holiday party. And we don't do it to raise money. We're not an organization that has the big dinners to raise money. But we do have events to celebrate, again, our families and our staff.
Are there organizations? Well, obviously there are organizations out there that you collaborate with. Can you give us a snapshot of who some of those agencies and partners are?
Sure. Well, and again, I think it's real important that that's also something from the beginning. We don't like to waste money. We like to maximize resources, and we're not talking just about us. We're talking about the whole community. So we made a pledge that, you know, from the beginning, if somebody else was doing it in the community, then we didn't need to. You know, we just needed to work with them. So we always have, you know, I grew up in the country, so we grew up on a farm, so you barter for things. So, you know, I give you the eggs and you give me the milk. And, and so really that's kind of the model that we use. And don't start calling me Kathy Sue, Norman. sometimes she goes there with me. But yes, and so, you know, for example, you know, Charles Drew, the project, I mean, you always provided our AIDS education services, you know, and a whole lot of our testing, and, you know, and so, again, we could have gone after grants for that, but no, that didn't make any sense when we've got somebody great in the community that was already doing that. So, I mean, we have probably over 130 partners, I mean, but some of our major ones are IMHP, Institute for Maximum Human Potential, Parallels Niños, Cedars-Sinai comes in, brings their immunization van on a regular basis, Public Counsel, they do all of our legal services, they do an immigration clinic, an unaccompanied minors clinic for us, you know, don't let me miss
Avalon
Carver, ADAP, Children's Bureau, Children's Institute. I mean, the list goes on and on and on again. But, you know, all of the, I mean, that's something I'm very proud of. Really, all of the key players, I like to say, in our area, we all really do work together. And we meet on a regular basis. And we don't compete against each other for funding. And we've figured out a plan so that, you know, one agency takes the lead and then the others are their partners, and we all benefit from it so that we're not competing for what's out there.
That sounds like an exceptional plan. And the organization has won a few awards over the years. So would you tell us about some of the more significant ones that come to mind or that you appreciated most?
I think the first big one we got that we were really proud of was the Athena Award for most efficient use of funding for our program. And we were flown to Washington, D.C., and we met the Secretary of, what was
the Surgeon Cooch, General.
The Surgeon General.
Everett Koop, yeah.
Yes, Everett Koop. And so that was early on in Shill's history. And we've had several more since then.
Yeah, but that one was really significant because we didn't even know that anybody had applied for us. And it was actually a doctor at MLK that put in the application and calculated all of that. Because, again, 1,200 babies being born every year that were substance exposed. And here we are providing services now and changing that figure. So he he actually calculated it all out, looking at all the savings to the NICU and other resources that we saved the hospital in 1 year, $60 million.
Wow. Wow.
And so that was very exciting. Again, we were flown out, and we were babies, really, organizationally at that point in time. So to get that kind of recognition was, you know, validation of our work was really, really amazing. But we've also received a Hope Award that was from Governor Pete Wilson. You know, we talked about the Irvine Leadership Award. I mean, they handed it to me, but it really wasn't me. It was, you know, the agency and recognizing the work that we do. But again, we've received multiple, you know, recognitions over the years, but those are some of the key ones I think that stand out in my mind in terms of
from our discussion today. It sounds like they've all been well deserved. Your organization great.
Thank you.
And can you tell us some of the future endeavors? Is there anything new coming up the pipeline, or just sustaining what you've got so far?
Well, it's a combination. This lady decided to go ahead and retire. So,
you know, call it that.
Yeah, although I keep calling her back. But well, you know, we've been working together for, you know, almost 28 years. So it's a long time. I feel like my right arm has been amputated. So yeah. In fact, I'm stealing her after this and taking her to the office. She didn't have any choice because her husband dropped her off and she has no way home. but you know, I think that we've seen a real switch. You talk about funding in terms of how we get funded, that we move to a more fee-for-service kind of basis. And so that's, I think, a struggle for all nonprofits because you know, you're never exactly sure what your income is going to be. So we have been looking at some social enterprise models and have started implementing a few of those. So we've been doing a lot of work with small businesses in the community and through our Jericho program in order to get them prepared to apply for bids and get contracts. So I talked about, for example, our extermination program, our landscaping program. Well, those are all done by the training programs are done by the small businesses in the community. So they actually train and have developed certificate programs they can offer our, you know, folks who are coming through our programs. In exchange, we've been working with the Small Business Administration, the National NMAC, the National Association of Minority Contractors, in order to help get those folks bonded and certified and so that they can apply for some major contracts. And in exchange, we get some fees back from assisting them with getting their bids accepted. And so that started to generate some revenue for us.
Great.
And so it's an alternative way of looking at how we're doing business.
Well, as we approach the final moments of our program, we want to give you an opportunity to inform our listeners about how they can reach out to Shields, whether they want more information about the services that are available, or maybe they want to be on the CAB and are interested in getting that sort of information, or somebody out there is probably wondering how they can provide support of some sort to the organization. How do they reach you?
Okay, they can call our main office at 323-242-5000, extension 1209. And our website, where they can also donate right on the website itself, is shieldsforfamilies.org.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah, and on our website also, all of the, you know, anybody's looking at for a job, for example, or a volunteer opportunity, there on our website, you can go to that page and go ahead and look at what we have available and fill out an application. We are always looking for volunteers. I'm going to do a Trojan one because we've had Matt Barkley, who is a USC Trojan, now a Philadelphia Eagle. He's been with us all week, him and his family doing a Vacation Bible School for our youth. And
okay. I bet you didn't say go Buckeyes to him.
I did, actually.
You did.
I did. Yeah, I am a hardcore Buckeye, you know, but I still allowed him to be there. So, you know, so, I mean, and that's, again, you know, I mean, we're fortunate to have the Barclays with us, but we need volunteers of all kinds. Mm-hmm. And because we provide housing, we need anything that folks can donate, from clothes to furniture. You know, all of that is something that we can use and resource. And, of course, money. We can always use money.
You know.
Okay.
And then your main office is located where? Can people come to the main office? Is
yes, 11601 Southwestern, Los Angeles, 90047.
Yeah, if you know Southwest College, we're right across the street. We're essentially at the corner of Imperial and Western.
Well, let me give you the contact number and website address again. The phone number is 323-242-5000, extension 1209, and the website is shieldsforfamily.org. Well, it looks like we've come to the end of our hour. And we want to thank again our guests, Dr. Catherine Eisenhower and Ms. Norma Ntume. Thanks again for coming out and joining with us. This has been a fascinating and informative program. I'd also like to express my gratitude to our listening audience for your continued support of this program. And we, as usual, ask you to continue to spread the news about the Good News Radio magazine Tell your friends and members of your church home, your family. Tell them all to tune into this program every Wednesday afternoon at 1 p.m. On behalf of the production team of Dr. David Martins, Ms. Andrea Jones, and my co-host, Melanie Rodriguez, this is Charles McWells wishing you, as always, a good afternoon and good health.